Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. 5:30, we'll talk a little Commanders, discuss the defensive line. John Keim wrote an article about asking the question, have they done enough to be able to deal with the Eagles? Has anyone done enough to be able to deal with the Eagles? We'll look at it through that Commander's lens and the Commander's D-line through that lens coming up at 5:30. Right now, though, top story of the day, 5 o'clock. You know the deal. It's time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Of course, the top story of the day is the NBA Finals tonight, but we're going to put that on the back burner for a second as we welcome in Tim Bontemps from ESPN. Of course, he years wrote for the Washington Post as well. Tim, welcome back. Appreciate your time as always, sir.
Hey, great to talk to you, Craig. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Although I'm confused, and you're someone that I want to try to unconfuse myself with, or we're just going to be confused together, because this Desmond Bane trade over the weekend, you had a great write-up on a bunch of different angles of this on ESPN.com. And I'll just start here, man. Like, my reaction to this was, you've got to be kidding me in terms of the return that they got for Desmond Bane, them, of course, being the Memphis Grizzlies, who get a bunch of unprotected first-round picks, two rotation players, and a pick swap for Desmond Bane. And this is a year after Mikal Bridges, like, same thing. And I think Bridges is a better player than Bane. Is this just what, like, decent players in the league cost now? Or is the reaction around the league, like, is there confusion around the league in terms of what the market is for a player on the trade market?
I mean, I think you have to sort of look at these situations individually, right? So if you go back to the Mikal Bridges trade last year, he was a very good player on a very good value contract, right? And so he slotted right into New York's salary structure where they could make a trade for basically only sending out Bojan Bogdanovic, who has a potential, you know, maybe a career-ending ankle injury during the playoffs. And so they can add a really good player to their roster without sacrificing anything off their current roster, right? Now, was that a good value proposition long term? That's a much different conversation to have. But that is the thinking that went into that deal, right? This Desmond Bane trade is a similar sort of deal. You look at it for Orlando. This is the team that was dead last in three-point shooting, had very little offensive creation, desperately needed a perimeter scorer and shooter. Desmond Bane's a 41% three-point shooter for his career. He can play point. He's a great guy. He can also is a very credible defender, really strong, rugged defender. So he slots into what has been one of the best defensive teams in the league and gives them that offensive weapon that they need without sacrificing any defense. So from a fit standpoint, he's a great fit on a long-term deal that they can slot in and have him as part of this core going forward. So Orlando, a team that has been extraordinarily conservative with their draft picks, has not gone in for anybody, identified Desmond Bane as the player they wanted to go get and went and got him, right? And got a guy who's, I think, 26, 27, like in his prime, going to be right in line with Jalen Suggs and Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner going forward. Now, will that work out long-term? I think it's going to remain to be seen. And I think you can look at the Indiana Pacers as the upside of this deal, right? A year and a half ago, the Pacers traded for Pascal Siakam. I think they traded three firsts in a swap.
Yep, it was three.
Just three firsts. Yeah. Right. So that was a trade at the time that people said, that's a lot of firsts to give up for Pascal Siakam to then give him a max contract. How is this going to go? Is this really a deal you make if you're Indiana, right? Pacers made the conference finals last year. They're two wins away from a title this year. There's nobody saying anything other than that was an amazing trade for the Pacers, right? And leveled that team up and gave them a chance to compete for a title. Desmond Bane has the ability to potentially be that same kind of fit for Orlando. Or, to your point, Craig, if you go back to the Mikal Bridges deal, if Orlando, which hasn't got out of the first round of the playoffs in 15 years, by the way, is a first round and out team next year, or never gets out of the second round the next couple of years, then you're going to look at it and say, well, this maybe is more like the Mikal Bridges trade where, yes, the Knicks made the conference finals, but they gave up all this stuff. They don't really have a way to get better, and they feel like a team that's sort of maxed out in terms of their overall ceiling, right? So I think only time will tell about where the fit of this trade is and where it lands in terms of whether it was the right thing to do long-term or not. But what I think you do have to do is in each of these instances, whether it's the Rudy Gobert trade or the Donovan Mitchell trade or the Mikal Bridges trade or this trade or the Siakam trade, you have to sort of look at it through the prism of the specific team and the specific player that's involved and the motivations that go into why the deal is made. And it's why you have sort of these wildly varying value structures on a lot of these different trades, where a guy like Desmond Bane goes for four first in a swap, who is a very good player but hasn't made an all-star team yet. And Kevin Durant, who we'll probably talk about next, is probably not going to go for a package that looks like that, despite being Kevin Durant, right? For a whole other set of reasons.
Right. Yeah, I definitely want to get to the Durant piece of this in a second and what this means for the market. This Tim Bontemps is with us, and he wrote about all this again at ESPN.com. I guess, like, I hear you, and I think you make a great point in terms of the fit with Bane. And the Siakam piece was something I thought of as well. Like, he is the perfect fit. If you were to identify who could help the Orlando Magic, Desmond Bane would be one of the top names you would think of the archetype of player they needed. I guess where I struggle with this, Tim, is if I had asked you on Saturday, the day before this trade, hey, Desmond Bane is going to get traded tomorrow. What's the return? I don't think you would have said four first-round picks, a pick swap, plus two rotation players. And by the way, KCP, a champion who brought some real veteran leadership to that team.
See, this is, not to interrupt, Craig, mm-hmm. but this is sort of the part of the calculus of the trade, right? Like, mm-hmm. to say that Cole Anthony and KCP are rotation players is a little strong, right? Cole Anthony is a okay backup guard who's on an expiring contract and is in the deal to make the money work. Mm-hmm. And frankly, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a guy who was on a negative contract after a rough year last year. And it was part of the return in this trade is getting off of KCP's money.
So you almost look at that as they're getting off, like the extra first round. Like it's almost like it's two first rounders plus a two first rounder penalty, one for each of those guys.
Or maybe more like... probably 3-1. Like, Cole Anthony isn't negative. He's just a neutral. Like, he's just an expiring deal to make the money work. You could probably flip him for a second or something. But really, this is a combination of the Magic getting a player who perfectly fits their team while also moving on from a guy in KCP that was not a good fit last year and was not on a contract that was seen as a value one.
Got it.
Around the league with the way he played. Which, is again, is why each of these deals, it's not like there's like the NFL famously has the trade value chart for the draft, right?
Where right.
It's like you can say, like, if you want to trade for the number one pick and it's like 1,000 points or whatever, you give this combination of stuff to get to the 1,000 points. It doesn't really work like that with these things because there's so many different variables at play. And I'm not sitting here saying that, there are plenty of people in the league who agree with you and think that the Magic gave up too much, and they may have, but they also, the East is wide open in the wake of Jason Tatum's torn Achilles. And if the Orlando Magic are in the conference finals next year and have a chance to make the finals, and Desmond Bane is scoring 22 a game in the playoffs and hitting 40% from three, it's going to be hard to look at that trade and say it didn't work, And like, that's where, to your point, they identified a guy who fit their team. They aggressively went and got him. And they did so. And frankly, the most surprising thing about it is that the Orlando Magic, a team that hadn't actively acquired a player in a trade, as in they targeted a player and got him back in a deal, not that they didn't like get him as part of a deal setting out a veteran player for assets. Mm-hmm. The last time they did that was when they traded for Markelle Fultz in February 2019.
Wow.
So this is not a team that has been aggressively trying to pursue players in trade over the past 6.5 years. So the most surprising thing about this was not even that four picks were traded for Desmond Bane. It was that the Orlando Magic were the ones trading the four picks for him.
Right.
But they talked about after the season, their three-point shooting stunk. They had to go get some shooting. They had to get some playmaking. Desmond Bane became available. They identified him, and they went and got him.
No, that when you put it that way, it makes a lot more sense for sure. And obviously, the correct answer ultimately is like, well, if there was another team that was willing to give similar or just a little bit less, and this is what got it done, like that that is what a market is ultimately. And that does bring us to the Kevin Durant piece of this. Of I'm sure there are, you know, now what, four teams really that we're looking at, the three that your colleague Shams Charania reported that Durant would definitely sign an extension with on Saturday night, plus the Minnesota Timberwolves are still poking around as well, and we could see how that potentially goes down. They've all probably got different valuations on what Kevin Durant is worth at 37 years old. What's the latest you're hearing on what Durant wants, how much that matters, and then ultimately the return that Phoenix might get here?
I mean, it matters to some degree, but Phoenix is, I think, made it clear that they're going to make the best deal they can make. And, you know, it's not like Kevin's going to end up in a bad situation. All the teams that are trying to trade for him are good teams, or are going to be good teams in San Antonio's case, most likely. And I think the question just becomes who's going to be the most motivated to try to get a deal done? And will they give enough that, you know, especially in light of this Bane trade, will Matt Ishbia, the owner of the Suns, decide it's enough to send Kevin Durant packing? I think that's really what it's going to come down to. And I think we'll know between now and the draft where this is going to land. And, you know, I wrote in that piece, I think, you know, we're going to see a trade happen. If it does, it probably is going to be as much as what Memphis just got for Desmond Bane. And I think, you know, the Suns have to sort of, you know, either wrap their heads around that and make the best deal they can make, or decide they've got to try to make things work with Kevin going forward. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where that lands. So I would think with all the chatter that's gone on and where they are at on the trade, I think the expectation will be that they're going to, you know, get this thing over the finish line and send Kevin elsewhere and start to reorient the roster after what's been a pretty failed experiment the last couple of years.
Of course, that all started with the Bradley Beal trade, which brings us back to the home team. Just real quick, Tim, I'm sure that you haven't done a ton of Wizards recon. You're covering the NBA Finals actively and this Kevin Durant thing. And while we are hoping the Wizards can be good in the next couple of or in a couple of years, really, we know it's a long rebuild. But are there, you know, pieces on this team, the Washington team, whether it's someone like Jordan Poole, Marcus Smart, Corey Kispert, that you think teams that are in contention might be targeting, especially, and I wanted to bring this up too, because you wrote about this in the piece, because of the fact that the Nets are basically the only team with functional cap space, that, you know, July 25th, 10 days or so from now, is going to be 9 days from now, is going to be, or is it June 25th, the first round of the NBA draft day, is going to be the most active day of the offseason. Do you think that, like the Denny Avdija trade that seemingly came out of nowhere last year for Washington, that there are some potential targets on this Wizards team, and then we can get to the finals after that?
I think it's hard to say. I would guess, I mean, most of the most valuable pieces on the Wizards are, you know, their young core that isn't, you know, certainly going anywhere, right? So, you could maybe see some of those guys fly it around, particularly, you know, if, you know, like Smart's expiring, do they get an asset to send him out and take on some longer term money, maybe from somebody? Sure. But generally, I think you're going to see the Wizards, you know, doing what they have been doing, which is just trying to turn more assets and, you know, and try to land another, you know, guy or two in this draft that can be part of this young core moving forward, is to try to slowly build this thing up into a, you know, contending team in Washington.
All right. So the contending teams for now, there are two, Indiana, Oklahoma City. You're there in Oklahoma City. Of course, ESPN ABC has the finals. You can watch it there. We had our guy Kesty on. If you're driving around ESPN Radio, you can catch it there too. So there's now all your bosses are happy, Tim, that I did the requisite promos. The fourth quarter the other night, I think, is such an encapsulation of what this series has been, which is, you know, Indiana's playing really hard and it seems like they're in control and the building feels a certain way, at least the way it's coming through on television. You can tell me your experience from being there. And then you look at the scoreboard and you're like, oh, the Thunder are right there. Indiana misses a bunch of shots at the start of that quarter. SGA gets going. There's the fouls. He hits a bunch of free throws. Next thing you know, we're tied at two. I feel like there's other games in this series where Oklahoma City's had runs like that, but Indiana is right there. Being in the building, seeing it up close, talking to the participants. Does this series feel as even as that? We're, you know, watching it on TV. Obviously, it's 2-2. Do these two teams feel as equal when you're experiencing this in person? And do they feel as equal to each other when you're talking to these participants, you know, doing all your reporting?
I mean, I think the Thunder are the better team, but Indiana has once again proven they're an extraordinarily difficult team to play. And I've just been extraordinarily impressed by the way the Pacers have been able to bend teams to their will throughout the playoffs. It's been really awesome to watch them just slowly kind of grind one team after another down all the way through. And, you know, it's put them in a situation where, you know, they have a real, you know, they got a real live shot, obviously, in the series to win two out of the next three and get the franchise's first NBA championship. But I do think at the same time, that game four really felt like a missed opportunity. I mean, they dominated the game. They were plus 24 at the 3-point line. The Thunder couldn't make a three. They couldn't make a play. They could hardly make a pass for a lot of the game. And the Pacers just didn't let them hang around and let them hang around and let them hang around. And Jalen Williams, who has, you know, gotten some questions during these playoffs about how he has performed at different points, had the game of his life in the biggest game of his life. And those guys got it to a point where the MVP of the league could deliver in the final 5 minutes, and he did just that. And, you know, they were in a similar situation, down 2-1 in Denver in game four against the inevitable force that is Nikola Jokic, and they escaped from that game. And they were down 7 at the start of the fourth quarter in this game four the other night against a really good Indiana team at home with not a lot going in OKC's direction, and they find a way to get it done. And if they can get 2 out of 3 wins here over the next week, it's going to be those 24 minutes in what's been an all-time great season. You know, seventh most win, you know, tied for, I think, the seventh most wins in the history of the league with 68 in the regular season, record-setting point differential, pretty dominant overall playoff run. You know, it's a reminder that even for great teams like that, these things often come down to a couple lucky breaks here and there, even for really good teams. And you know, if the Thunder can get this thing done, it's going to be those two. It's going to be those two games that people are thinking back on. It's going to be those two fourth quarters that could very well be the difference.
When you look at Haliburton in Game Four, like, he was assertive and aggressive in certain ways, but he's only got 18 points, and I think there's probably some opportunities for him to take some shots where he takes passes, kind of that mid range where, you know, maybe against 28, you know, other teams, like, that's the right play. Kick it to the corner. We're against this team, the way that Oklahoma City scrambles and rotates, that taking a pull up two is actually not the worst shot. But especially, Tim, for tonight, for Haliburton on the road, where we see it all the time in the playoffs, role players play better at home versus on the road. You know, they get the 17 points from Toppin in that game four loss. So that feels like a big part of the wasted opportunity. Is there a way that Indiana wins tonight if Haliburton is not more aggressive to score? And I'm going to specify to score there as opposed to just a generic aggressive.
I mean, it's possible because, I mean, they did win game one here with him scoring like 14, but I mean, look, they're 33-4 when he scores at least 20 in a game, and they're 20-1 when he has at least 20 and 10 in a game, right? So, like, when he's aggressive scoring the ball, they're a dramatically different team. And can he deliver that kind of performance on the road? He's had some great performances at home, particularly in the last couple rounds of the playoffs. He has not had a performance like that on the road in a while. So, you know, what's that going to look like? What can he do? And what's the biggest game of his career? But look, I think the biggest thing to watch to me is the 3-point line. The Thunder are a great, great team, but they can go through stretches where they really don't hit anything. And, you know, they could really struggle to hit shots. And the Pacers, again, they were plus 24 in game four. They were plus 21 in game one. I think if they're over, you know, if they're plus 20 or better, plus 21 or better, I guess, from three in these games, they're going to feel like they have a chance to win. If it's I know they won game three, making one less three than OKC. that does not, to me, feel sustainable, particularly on the road. Like, they've got to, I think they've got to hit 16, 18, 20 threes, and they've got to hold OKC down. And if they do, and if Haliburton can get going, which if they hit that many threes, he's probably going to get going to some degree, they'll give themselves a chance to get this win and send the series back to Indy for game six with a chance to close it out.
Game five tonight, going to be a lot of fun to watch. Tim Bontemps is there. All the coverage from him, ESPN Television, ESPN.com. Tim, always appreciate your time, sir, and enjoy the game tonight.
Awesome. Thanks, Craig. Appreciate you, man.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Thanks again to Tim Bontemps for joining us talking NBA Finals. We'll do more on that in an hour. Our preview of Game 5. We still have Toby Altizer coming up at 6 o'clock to talk Nationals because there is a lot going on in Natsland. But right now, Anthony, a little Commanders here on a Monday. And John Keim wrote a piece for ESPN.com where he asked what is a fairly simple question. Have the Commanders done enough on their defensive line to stop the Eagles? Obviously, stopping the run in general was a problem for them last year. One of the stats that's been floating around there, Keim has it in this piece as well. Of the top 10 teams against the run last season, 9 made the postseason. Of the bottom 10, only Washington reached the playoffs. So how bad were the numbers, specifically against Philly? In 3 games versus Washington, Saquon Barkley alone, nevertheless, Jalen Hurts as a running quarterback or any of the other backs, ran for 414 yards, 7 touchdowns, and averaged 5.9 a carry. The Eagles as a team topped 200 rushing yards each of those 3 games. They also struggled specifically against heavier formations. Keim had these numbers in his piece as well at ESPN.com. Washington allowed 5.4 yards per carry when facing 2 or 3 tight end sets. However, in the past 8 games, or the last 8 games of the season, including the 3 postseason contests, the Commanders allowed 7.2 yards per rush versus those formations. And Philly specifically ran the ball 59 times out of 12 or 13 personnel. I guess I should say 2 or 3 tight ends. I guess they could have 2 backs on the field. It could have been 22 or 23. But 2 or 3 tight ends on the field, 6.1 yards per carry, 8 touchdowns. It is clearly an enormous problem that Washington had last year. Philly exposed it as much as anybody. And the solution, Anthony, was to add size. They brought in Javon Kinlaw, who every single person you ask that saw Javon Kinlaw this spring, the first thing they will tell you is that's the biggest human being I've ever seen in my life. Literally. We could not tell them the bit. And we could have Keim on. We could have Standing on. We could have Nikki on. We could have Sam on. We could have JP, Mitch, David Harris, on that list. Anybody that's on the beat. Candy, whoever. What do you think of Javon Kinlaw? Dude, that guy's the biggest human being I've seen in my life. He's massive. Massive. Eddie Goldman, who we didn't see this spring, but is in the mix now as a potential nose tackle. He's over 300 pounds, 320 pounds, to be more exact in terms of the weight he's listed at. Obviously, you have Deron back, who's a 300-pounder. Johnny Newton's a little bit undersized. But then on the edge, you have guys like Dietrich Wise, 6'5", 280 as an edge player, which is about as big as John Allen was as a defensive tackle. John said he played about 285, even though he's listed at 295, and that's inside. So I think this is a very smart approach, and this is where if you look at Washington, Anthony, last year, and you're like, oh, they gave up these big plays in the secondary, they didn't have a pass rush, blah, 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 blah. It all starts with their inability to stop the run. If you could just be in better situations, you can set yourself up for success against the pass. You can't stop the run, your defense is DOA. Because now offenses are in complete and total control. Their whole playbook is open. It's too hard to stop that in the NFL. But if you can make a team one-dimensional, even if that one dimension is the pass, now all the other stuff you want to do, all the variants you want to introduce to the game as a team who wants to generate turnovers, that stuff can happen. And I actually do have some hope that they've both schematically looked at some things. There's some good quotes from Joe Witt in this John Kine piece. And personnel-wise have addressed what they need to address to have a significantly better year in this department and thus a significantly better defense.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this team try to utilize Daron Payne at edge just because we really could not, you know, set an edge. Dante Fowler was often too small on the run that Saquon took 60 yards in the NFC title game. It's just like the first play of the game, he gets washed. So,
and what, you know, no, that was not, he did not get washed. He did not do the right thing. And so, like, sometimes he did the right thing and it wasn't good enough because he got washed because he's too small. But there was a lot of freelancing from that dude who just would be like, I'm going to go over here. And sometimes it worked. Like, he would jump inside and make some plays, and you're like, damn, go Dante Fowler. Look at you. But on the first play of the NFC title game, mm-hmm. the 60-yard Saquon touchdown, he tries a spin move. Like, his job is to set a hard edge, outside zone, or, you know, some kind of, I don't know, I can't remember exactly what it was, outside zone or mid zone that bounced out that direction. But it's a zone run. His job is to set the edge. And Bobby Wagner's going to come into that hole where Saquon's going to cut things up, and he's going to make a tackle for 2 yards. And instead, Dante Fowler spins back, gets mushed right into Bobby Wagner, causes a multi-car pileup, and now all the players that are inside can't get outside. And where Saquon go? Outside, 60 yards, house call. So, yeah, it's part too small, but it's also the thing that I like about who they brought in is – especially Wise,
mm-hmm.
Kinlaw, we can talk about in a second, but especially Wise is just going to do his job. And I mean that in a literal sense, not as a, hey, he used to play for Bill Belichick before Bill Belichick became an American punching bag, back when, you know, he was known as a really disciplined football coach. Like, he will just do the thing he's supposed to do, which means that Johnny Newton and Daron Payne and the guys next to him can do what they're supposed to do. It means Bobby Wagner can do what he's supposed to do, which is make tackles. It means Frankie Luvu can go shoot a gap, and he can be the freelancer, which makes him a lot more dangerous as opposed to, hey, Frankie, read, react, play your lane. Like, no, you be the wild card, Frankie Luvu. And getting rid of Fowler while you're also getting rid of a ton of sack production will make this run defense better, and then you hope to make up the sack production by having better situations because you're better on first and second down, and you can do some fun blitz stuff on third down because it's third and nine and you don't have to worry about stopping the run on a third and three.
Yeah, and I think the additional point that you just made in terms of, you know, bringing in guys that are going to be willing to be coached, you know, are coming from a good culture in a Dietrich Wise. Then you also got Jonathan Jones in the back end. But I think having those people that, you know, are just going to be willing to do their job, I think, is essential. But back to the point was, you know, we didn't necessarily have to, we don't now with the people that we brought on, we don't have to move a Daron Payne to the edge. We have guys that are versatile enough to, you know, play the three tech, or they can put them out to the five tech and you put them out seven, nine, like whatever. Like, we have that much versatility on the defensive line as opposed to, you know, mixing and matching and seeing what we can do in order to combat the run. I mean, obviously, like, we're going to need to be able to do that if we want to win games.
The thing is, though, they can still do that stuff. Like, yes, you could just say, like, Dietrich Wise is on one side and Dorrance Armstrong's on the other, and pick two of the three defensive tackles between Newton, Kinlaw, and Payne in the middle, or you're rotating in Sheldon Day and, you know, Eddie Goldman and, like, that, the backups. But if you want to, let's say you're going against a team that really loves to run it and they have certain stuff where they need to get to the edge. If you want to put Daron Payne on the edge, you still can, because you now have Kinlaw inside as a you're not stretching yourself as thin, right? You have Kinlaw, who you can put out there on that edge and be like, he is big, strong, and physical. And sometimes he doesn't always read things correctly, but if we tell him, hey man, go out there and don't let them push you around. Don't try to penetrate. Just wait, let them come to you, and don't move. Javon Kinlaw can do that. So it's about coaching up the talent that you have. It's about utilizing it in the best way possible from personnel and scheme standpoint. But then the other thing that I thought was interesting in Kime's piece is he talked about some of the three linebacker stuff that they wanted to do last year and couldn't get to because Jordan McGee got hurt in training camp. And so whether it's McGee, whether it's someone like a Dominique Hampton, that's, you know, last year they still played a bunch of nickel against the 12 and 13 personnel stuff. And that was a problem because now you're outmatched from a man-to-man standpoint. Like man on man, they have bigger men than you do. And you're get all of a sudden getting a tight end blocking Noah Igbinoghene in the nickel. And like, that's not going to work for Noah. Well, now that guy becomes Dominique Hampton, who's a linebacker. And that's a much better matchup. But you're hoping to not lose it if they decide to pass it because Hampton's a former safety. Hopefully he can play a little bit better in coverage. This is the hope for a guy like Kane Medrano as well. The sixth-round rookie out of UCLA, rookie out of UCLA. You have these guys that are linebackers but can cover space, and you get a best-of-both-world scenario. So you could either go a true base defense with three real linebackers in Frankie, Bobby, and Jordan McGee, or you could go kind of a bigger nickel with a guy like Hampton, playing that role. It's, you know, small linebacker, big nickel hybrid. Or you can go true nickel with Mikey. You can go three safeties, put Will Harris down there. So they just have a lot more options this year. And I think most of those options we look at is better against the run than the options they had last year, which didn't work out so great when they didn't have the options at all. And they were just wearing nickel all the time. 301-230-0980 is the phone number. 301-230-0980. Get your thoughts in on this. Have the Commanders done enough to beef up their defensive line, specifically to stop the Eagles? 301-230-0980. Your calls after a look at what's trending.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. Toby Altizer is going to join us in a few minutes. He's over at Nats Park, where Davey Johnson has had himself an interesting couple of days. The Nationals manager said, frankly, one of the dumbest things I've ever heard a coach say over the weekend. I think Davey's a pretty smart guy, but You can't say the thing that he said because it's not true, and it's a silly thing to say as a coach. So we'll talk about that by ourselves. And actually, Anthony, I kind of want to. Well, no, you had a good question about the Commanders' D-line stuff. So I'm gonna stay on track, even though I kind of want to talk more about this Davey thing all day. We'll talk about it with Toby, and I'll unload some extra thoughts at 6:15, and then we'll get into the NBA Finals tonight. But Anthony. You had a question, follow up on the Commanders D-line conversation we were just having.
Yeah, I was curious to pick your brain about whether or not you think the Commanders will deploy a single front, you know, sort of kind of like Ron Rivera did when we had our four first round draft picks. But I think also just having the guys that we brought in, the fact that Eddie can play nose but also move over if need be. Then you guys playing three techs, and then you have some people on the edge. Could we see, you know, them, I guess, use the single package since we have all this versatility up front?
Yes, I definitely think that you can. I think they're, you know, where that gets interesting, well, lot of thoughts. First of all, they played odd fronts last year. So odd front is exactly what you think. There's an odd number of people on the line of scrimmage, and whether that is three or five, could be 7 or 9 or 11, but really it's 3 or 5 typically, and it's how many guys you have in the line of scrimmage versus even fronts, which are typically 4, right? So last year they played more 3 down, or occasionally they'd play 4 down and 1 extra guy hanging. So, you know, that's kind of a 4-3 odd front, right? So it's still 4 linebackers four defensive ends and three linebackers, but you have one linebacker that's on the line of scrimmage. And actually, they would play it more as like a 5-1. Again, it's getting a little technical, but they would have five guys on the line of scrimmage. It's just what body types. And that was the thing about the Cinco package when they had it here, was they would have three defensive linemen or three defensive tackles in Duran, John, and someone else. And then they would have the two edge guys in Sweat and Payne and Young, and you truly have five defensive linemen on the field with one linebacker behind it. I am curious to see if they do any of that this year. And then do they have just Bobby Wagner on the field? Do they have 5-2 and then kind of a base look, like you're doing it to stop the run? So like, let's get those linebackers out there. And if we only have, you know, four defensive backs on the field, then so be it. That's fine. Who are those defensive backs? Is it Will Harris and Quan Martin at safety? Or do you have a bigger body back there? Is a Percy Butler back there with his speed and his ability to get downhill? So there's a lot of, I think, variations off of that. And it could very well be that, like, we want a package where we can get Javon, Johnny, and Duran, the three defensive tackles, on the field together. Obviously, you could make one of those guys Eddie Goldman. You could have, if you wanted to get super big, you could put Kinlaw or Payne on the edge with Goldman as a nose tackle, and those other two guys is you know, five techniques or however you want to line it up, and Dorrance Armstrong on the other side. Like, there's a bunch of combinations. And I think that's kind of the point, is like, will you see odd fronts? Yes. Is the Cinco or a version of a Cinco package with five defensive linemen out there a possibility? Absolutely. Will you see odd fronts with just three defensive linemen out there and then Frankie and Jordan McGee on the edge, or maybe Dorrance as a stand-up outside linebacker? Because that was the other thing. Last year they had Fowler, and they put Fowler and Frankie on the edge, and Fowler would be standing up. So technically that's a three-down front, but you're in five guys on the line of scrimmage. So Jacob Martin is another wild card guy. He's a guy they acquired this offseason. So there's a lot of different possibilities, and it just kind of is what works best against the team that you're playing. And that's ultimately like what you're trying to solve if you're Joe Witt, is you want to be prepared to do all these things. This is actually what made the Belichick defense so good over the years, is Bill said, okay, you are a team that likes to do this. This is the defense that is best on paper to go against that. We're going to make sure that we execute it on the field as well as it's drawn up on paper, no matter what it is. And so if you can have your guys ready to go in multiple fronts and understand, if we're in this front against this offensive line look, these are our run responsibilities. And if this tight end comes in motion and now our gaps have shifted and these are our new, like, playing the run sounds simple. Play your gap. It's not that simple. You have to know what your gap is. And it takes smart football players to do that. But if you can have that much on the guys' plates, then I think from a personnel standpoint, that was a very long answer to say, yes, Anthony, I think they will potentially have five defensive linemen on the field at points this season.
I mean, it's interesting you bring up, you know, I guess gap integrity, just because we've seen Saquon, you know, cut back and, you know, be gone. And that's sort of kind of the thing that would scare me about the Cinco package. I feel as though, like, once you get past that first line of defense, it's not too much really
That's where it depends, right? It depends. You can, like, if you're playing nickel and there's just a bunch of little dudes back there, like, that's not going to be great. If you're playing, like, yeah, we got five, but we still got two linebackers on the field, and, you know, we've got a Quan Martin level safety who's good, a good tackler who takes good angles, or Will Harris, same thing, he'll thump you in the run game. Like, yeah, you have an extra guy. But I think what you're also counting on at that point is squeezing down those gaps so that there's not anywhere to go. You can't get out of your gap in the first place, and there's no cutback to have. There's nowhere to go. And I think that's the other big difference, right? Is like, any of these things theoretically work if you execute them well. Football is a game of execution. Best laid plans, they can get, you know, thrown out with bad execution, and you can have a horrible plan, like, oh God, you know, it's two man and they're running this concept and it's designed to be two man. But if your guys match the concept right and figure it out on the fly, you can overcome a bad play call. It's just how it is. That's football, is ultimately who can make the play, who can make the adjustments on the fly to do it. And whether it's a discipline thing, whether it's a go make a play thing, like, got to have good players. And I think that's, you know, where kind of where I land is, like, I think the Commanders have pretty good players. And that's helpful. And they're smart players. So that's helpful in getting the job done. What's going on with the Nationals? They've lost 8 straight games. Their manager is saying it's not any of the coach's fault. It's always the player's responsibility, which seems like a silly thing for a coach to say. So that's not great. But there is good news. They're calling up Brady House, top pick a couple years ago. Toby Altizer's all over it. The host of our Bustin' Loose Baseball podcast joins us next here on the Team 980.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.